This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to the Late Late Show on Thursday, the 25th of April, 2024. I'm your host, Paul Hazard, and with me tonight to talk about leadership that cares is Dr. Cheryl Bowman. Let's get to it.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live. Tune in live at ttradio.org, or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
I've always considered myself to be a caring head teacher who acts sensitively to support staff mental health. But what I found increasingly difficult was managing the negative impact on staff mental health when resolving issues related to their employment or daily work. Heartfelt Leadership has been developed by TeachWell Toolkit as a handbook to support head teachers to overcome the challenges of school improvement while supporting staff well-being. We know that difficult conversations can quickly turn into conflict if procedures are not fully transparent, understood, and followed. Our handbook takes you through step-by-step processes while maintaining mutual respect, avoiding conflict, and finding solutions.
At Bloomsbury Education, we're passionate about supporting teachers with high-quality professional development books from leading experts. Whether you're navigating your first crucial years as an early career teacher, or a more experienced teacher looking to refresh your practice or take a step up into leadership, our award-winning books are here to help. We publish practical books to support teaching across primary and secondary, from the very best in research-led practice to trusted advice on inclusivity, behaviour and curriculum design. Visit the Bloomsbury Education website at bloomsbury.com/education to find out more and use code BLOOMTTR24 to save 20% on all education titles. Bloomsbury Education, books for every step of your teaching journey.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. Now, regular listeners know that I love nothing more than a little international flavour to the programme. And we've got that tonight because tonight's guest, Dr. Cheryl Bowman, lives in Canada. Cheryl, how are you?
I'm doing very well, Paul. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're most welcome. Cheryl, what time is it with you and whereabouts in Canada are you?
It is 4:04 p.m. So I believe we are 5 hours behind you. So I can hear your accent and I'm sure you can hear my accent.
Yes.
And neither of us probably think that we have an accent, but we do.
Oh, I know. Yes. I have. Oh, I definitely know I have. So what do you think of my accent then?
I love it. I love it. Honestly.
Okay. Well, I don't love it. I think it's dreadful, but I just think it's harsh and it's nasal and it's tonal and it's yuck.
No, it's
But
great.
You have a great accent. You have that kind of, yeah. It's kind of, what is it? Is it like kind of broad kind of vowels? Is that what Canadians have?
That's what they say. They say that we do interesting things with our A's. And so
I can hear that. Yeah, I can hear that.
Throughout the show, you might hear me say A every now and again.
Well, that would be most welcome. Yeah, definitely you can say A. Yeah.
We get teased about that a lot. So
Yeah. Well, I get teased about my accent, but that's for different reasons. Dear Cheryl, I said I love an international flavor to the school, but here's an interesting thing. You can add another international dimension to the show because, Cheryl, tell us about your daily commute.
Well, my daily commute, if it wasn't for technology, would be very, very long.
In fact,
I would just be continuously probably on a plane.
Yes.
Back and forth. Yes, I work for the University of Southern Queensland, which is in Australia.
An altogether different continent.
Completely different. Yes, yes. I received my doctorate of education from the University of Southern Queensland. And then I was fortunate enough to find work with them as well. And I work with the Leadership Research International with them as well. So when I teach with them and when I talk with them, students right away can pick up that I'm not from Australia. I don't even have to tell them. They just immediately ask. Yeah. Right. So it's great. Mm-hmm. But I love the international flair too. I think it's important that we build communities throughout the entire world, right? Because we're all in this together. We're all in this huge community of learners, no matter what continent we're on, and no matter where we find ourselves in this world. I believe that we still have the same challenges. That's what I have found through working in Australia and also working in Canada, and then working throughout the world as well with various people and researchers and educators throughout the world.
So a lot of your work is with school leadership. So what are the challenges and the difficulties that you're finding that are common across the world, Cheryl?
Well, I'm finding, I think, one of the biggest challenges, and that's why I do a lot of writing and research in this area, is I find the importance of relationships in our schools and in our places of work. I'm not quite sure where all of your listeners come from. I'm assuming that they're all in the educational sphere somewhere.
Definitely. Yes, definitely.
But I believe that there really needs to be a strong relationship between both formal and informal school leadership, and that I see all people within a school as being leaders in some capacity.
Now,
so that's the mindset that I have.
Yeah.
Yes, I do
that's
have that
interesting.
Mindset.
So, yeah. Okay. So, formal and informal leadership. Just break that down for me a bit, Cheryl.
Correct. Well, formal is, it's really something that's given to us, right, by an institution or by an organization. Someone is formally in the capacity to look after the operations of the school, to look after the personnel, to look after the curriculum, the pedagogy. So there's that formalness to a leadership role. But often it's the informal leaders within the school that really take the vision, take the community forward with their leadership. And so I see both formal and informal leadership working together.
And
I think that it's very, very important. But I see every single person within a school as being a leader in some capacity, whether it's the caretaker of the school, he or she leads in a certain way, whether it's the secretarial staff, whether it's the teachers, whether it's the principal. I think that it's very important that we all see ourselves as accountable and as having a leadership role within the school.
Yeah, yeah. I'm very much in agreement with you, Cheryl, but I'm going to play devil's advocate here for a little minute. Are you saying then that having a title, having a job description and a title doesn't necessarily make you a leader?
Yes, that would be correct. Yes, I am saying that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that there are many people across a school who would be, and you'll work out, I like it a little bit of Latin, who would be de facto leaders. In other words, they don't have the title, but in fact, in effect, they are the people who can carry off influence.
Correct. Yes, yes. And it depends, like, who are your influencers within the school? And that's, I think, a very important role that a formal leadership formal leaders have, is to see and figure out who are the influencers within the school, and how can you as a formal leader affect and work with the people that are the influencers.
Okay, right. Well, I have a second question, and I'm still in devil's advocate here. I've still got my horns and my tail on here. We are always told, and we're told and taught by, you know, gurus in leadership for decades, right? That the principal is the leader. The principal is the person who has the power. And, you know, they've done studies and so on and so forth that in meetings where they've tracked people's eyes and their body language and their movement. And even when the principal isn't involved in decision-making, people look to him or her before they contribute when they're making. Can a principal, for example, hold a disproportionate and maybe undeserved amount of leadership?
Yes, that's a very good way of asking the question. I believe that, yes, that there is this positionality of a leadership role within the school. But I also believe that there is good leadership and bad leadership. But I also believe that you can be coercive in your power, or you can lead with the power, because there is an empowerment to being that formal leader in the school. But are you looking at using it? How are you looking at using the power that you do have? And I think that is really the key to a lot of the studies that I've done, my beliefs as well, in terms of caring and collaborative leadership and leadership that enables belonging. And so I think it's more that empowerment of people within the school, and whether it's the teachers, whether it's the students, whether it's the parents, it's that empowering of them to also take on leadership roles and not to always look to the principal, because that really isn't fair either, I don't think, because the principal doesn't have all the answers. And any principal that thinks that they do, I believe that they're sadly mistaken, because there really isn't. And I used to be a principal, so I can say it, right?
I
can get away with it. Yes. I still hold the Ontario Provincials OPC credentials, right? So I am a principal, but I see that but when I was a principal, there was no way that I could lead the school on my own. Did I see that people could and would look to me for cues and for clues? Yes, absolutely. But what I tried to do with my staff was to empower them, was to provide them with confidence, was to show that I believed in them. And so that my attitude was all about believing in the staff. But first of all, I had to really believe in myself, right? First of all, I think as that type of a leader, we have to know ourselves. We have to know our strengths and our weaknesses. So we have to love ourselves, and we have to also have a lot of self-awareness and self-control. So the number one thing is believing in ourselves, but then knowing others and ensuring that we have this. I don't know if you've heard of Carl Rogers before, but I also come from a background of counseling, and I used to be a guidance counselor as well. So I studied Carl Rogers a lot, and I brought that into my leadership. And so I believe that with every person that I came into contact with, but in particular teachers, that I had to have that empathy, and I had to have that unconditional positive regard, and that our relationship had to be congruent. And if it wasn't, I had to figure out why it wasn't. And I had to come to some terms with reconciling that as a leader and figure out how could I involve maybe some people that maybe weren't as likable as others, because that was my job, right? It was my job to empower the teachers and to empower the students and the parents.
Yeah. Now, Cheryl, I like a kind of a loose framework for a show, but there is a bit of a framework there. We're already miles away off my framework.
Okay, sorry Paul.
Oh, don't you worry.
That's
great.
That's part of, like, I think talking with me too, we could go off in many directions too. But as a principal too, I also believe in being focused. right? Well, and having a focus within a school and visions within a school too, so that everyone is collectively and collaboratively working together for shared goals.
We'll come back to that, but I'm very happy for you to go off into little tangents and things. Yeah. But Cheryl, could I pull you back to one thing you said? Mm-hmm. And you said a principle, and I'm going to extend that out. We're talking about principles, but I'm going to talk about leadership. Okay. Leaders have to have self-belief, you said. And you said that was one of the top qualities. But is it not fair to say that a lot of a leader's time is spent with other people trying to push them off the course of that self-belief? You know, with people trying to persuade them to other views, other ways of thinking, different ways of doing things.
And so that's a really good point. And so to me, that's a coercive type of a leadership, right? Like that's a leadership that is really not looking out for the best interests of staff.
But Cheryl, sorry, maybe I'm interrupting you again, but it's just because I'm very excited about all of this. What I mean, so for example, Cheryl, when I was a leader.
Yes.
Okay, so I might take a staff briefing or a staff meeting, and I might have five items on the agenda. And, you know, as I go through item number one, and item number one could be, you know, we're going to change something on the timetable, for example, right? But that would create a lot of dissonance among the staff, create a lot of objection. There would be people even in the meeting who would be saying to me, Paul, hold on a minute, but what about my business studies? How's that going to have an impact on my exam classes? What's going to happen to PE? Do you know what I mean? I might have a very strong vision that the timetable needs changed. That's my belief. I am in a leadership position to be able to change the timetable. But in putting that to the staff, I am going to have my beliefs seriously challenged by people who are intelligent, experienced, expert communicators. Is that not the situation?
Correct. Yes, yes. And that's where a leader needs to understand that when we do put something out there that we do see needs to maybe be changed, right? But we also then have to value the opinions of others. And we also have to listen to their opinions and really show them that we actually care. And I'm going to come back to the caring part of it too, right? That we really care about their concerns, because they're the ones who are doing it every day. They're the ones who are actually putting that schedule into effect. And so it's important that we hear, okay, why the business teacher believes that this new timetable isn't going to work. It's important that we hear from someone else who thinks that it will work or it might work in a different way. At the end of the day, the principal still makes that final decision. But I think it's important that we listen to the collective voice of the staff members, because if they aren't buying into something, then it's going to be difficult to have them fully enacted out. And so we're using a timetable as an example, but you know, even if there's a new pedagogical model that the district wants the teachers to use, and without teachers voicing their opinion and coming to some agreement with the staff, it's very difficult then for a principal to have their staff enact it, because they also need to know that their opinions are valued and that they are believed in. And I think you probably heard this saying before, although maybe it's a North American saying, but people don't care what you know until they know that you care. And so, I mean, sure, there are principles out there that just say, this is the new timetable, this is what we're doing, too bad. And but then that doesn't really foster a culture and a sense of belonging and job satisfaction. There's a lot of studies on those. I'm not going to, I could get off on a lot of tangents here, but people just don't feel that they have a say. And so then that leads to other things, right? It leads to people not being satisfied in their workplace. It leads to them not feeling like they have a sense of belonging and community in the school. And so maybe people will take more days off work. Like you'll have problems in other areas if you don't address these main areas as a leader, as far as I'm concerned.
We have a couple of calls coming in and texts coming in. I think my example was possibly something of a red herring. So Paul, for example, is saying here, you know, there's no point in bringing up a discussion in a staff meeting if the leader's only going to choose what they want anyway. And absolutely. And I think, you know, all of us as good leaders, we would have done the groundwork beforehand. I was a great believer in leadership is getting out from behind your desk, walking away out to those classrooms, engaging those teachers, engaging the canteen ladies, the little patrol lady, engaging all those people and really taking the temperature and getting everybody's point of view. And then you come back, and at the end of it all, you have to be your own person and you have to have a self-belief, even though it's challenged by, you know, a lot of very, very capable people. So yes, my example is maybe a little bit of a red herring. You would be a fool to stand up in a staff meeting and try and push that through as a brand new point to everyone.
Mm-hmm. Like something that major, it's true. You would have discussions beforehand. You would then come to some agreement before you would say, okay, this is the way that the schedule is going to go. Although some leaders don't do that. Right. Like some. And so I would even question, are they really a leader then? Like, is that really or is it more of a dictatorship?
Yeah.
Is it more of like, this is what we're going to do and too bad. And that certainly doesn't build a sense of community and a sense of belonging in schools. And and teachers know right away then that when a leader is just bringing ideas forth and they're saying this is what's going to happen, then there's not a lot of buy-in sometimes. There's a lot of resistance. And so that just creates a lot of tension on staff. And we all know that there are places like that, that people do work. But I guess, you know, what I'm trying to say is that I think, like you said, that you were out and about all the time. And as a principal, I was out and about all the time, getting to know people. I think it's very important that we enact ourselves as servant leaders and that we get right in there. And that we understand, I'm just thinking of one example where a teacher, she was going through a really difficult time in her life. And so for a few days, I said, I'm taking your duties over. And I did, right? Mm-hmm. Because she came to me and said, this is what's going on in my life. And I said, you know what? You take more time to do your work, because she was a very dedicated teacher. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm going to do your duties for you for the next few days so that you can get caught up. Because you're dealing with other things, you're juggling with other things. So it's being that servant leader. It's being that leader that, like, when you're a caring and collaborative leader and you have that mindset of growth, like a growth mindset, that takes courage. Like you said, you have to have a resolve at the end of the day that you know who you are and you know what you believe in. But to me, it takes courage, it takes strength, it takes bravery to stand up to, I think, the powers that are over a principal, that are maybe pressuring them to put a cookie cutter model in place, for example.
What's a cookie cutter model?
So a cookie cutter model would be, maybe that's not a term that you would use, but it would be, you know, every school does it the same way. We're all going to do this the same way, right? So it comes down from above, and that's the pressures that I believe that principals are under, right? They're the middle managers that are being squeezed. So for them to say, look, this isn't going to really work at my school because I've talked to my staff about this and this is how they see things. That takes strength. That takes courage.
Yeah.
That takes a mindset that really cares about their own school community and cares about the leaders, the informal leaders within their school.
Mm-hmm. So I suppose what I really want to ask in relation to self-belief, Cheryl, is did you ever have doubts? Because I can tell you, in the 32 years that I was a leader, I had a lot of doubts. And, you know, for example, if I asked, say, for example, I'll try and think of a better example this time so people aren't calling in to criticize my examples.
I know what you were doing, though, Paul. You were just trying to come up with an example that we could talk about. Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, don't worry. So, for example, I remember one time working with a fantastic teacher. She would have been a middle manager, what we would call a year head. She was in charge of an entire year of students, you know, maybe 120 odd students. And fantastic, outstanding. And she loved working with that first year, or year eight, as we call it in Northern Ireland, pupils who are just into what would be high school in America or Canada. And I saw something in her, and I thought she would be better placed in sixth form. Now, that's working with 17 and 18-year-olds. So I spoke to her over a number of months and so on, and I could see the distress that my vision was causing with her, do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Great girl, so on and so forth. And she did move into sixth form. Now, as it turned out, it was kind of temporary. It was 2 or 3 years, and we eventually moved her back down to year eight again. But I have to say, you know, that it did cause me to doubt, do you know what I mean, and doubt my belief. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was an earthquake-type doubting, but, you know, did you have your self-belief shaken by things like that?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, absolutely I did. And I think that's when it's really important to have mentors, you know, that we can go to and that we can talk to people that we trust. But then that we also, I mean, if we've made mistakes, but you did the right thing, you went to her, you were talking with her, you saw the potential in her for maybe change. You wanted her to maybe try something new. I think that's what I'm hearing from you. You know, you wanted to move her kind of out of her box and give her new experiences. But I think, you know, when you, I do this sometimes in workshops where I get people to write letters to themselves or write words of wisdom, you know, to their former self, right? To someone when they first started out in their career and where they are now, if they've had experience. Mm-hmm. And I think it's looking back, right? We're looking in the rearview mirror sometimes when we look at these situations. And so because it sounds like you have a lot of leadership experience, I do as well, we can look back and say, oh, some people actually don't like change and they resist it. Mm-hmm. And is that always such a bad thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like some people thrive in change. They're risk takers, but some people just really like teaching a certain grade level and that's what they like. Some people like variety. And so I think, I mean, looking in the rearview mirror, I look back and I say, you know, sometimes it's not a good idea to change things, right? Mm-hmm. Like so when I have made mistakes in the past, I learned very early on, a good mentor of mine taught me never, ever fear to go back and apologize. Never fear to go back and say, I'm sorry. I really did make a mistake.
Yeah.
Here. And I think that type of vocabulary, that intentionality of our vocabulary is missing too. It's, you know, we're just, for lack of a better word, and I'm using we here, right? We have sometimes a lot of pride. And so we don't want to say, I made a mistake. Oh, I'm the leader here, right? I don't have to admit that I made a mistake. But anytime that I have admitted it, whether it's to a parent, to a child, to a student, to a teacher, the relationship has flourished over time instead of going the other way.
Yeah.
Most times, most times. I mean, there's been a few times that it hasn't. Okay. I will say that, but most times it has. So I think it's that intentionality. It's also sharing what we have wanted to do, what our vision was, but our vision sometimes isn't their vision. And so I think it's important to see that, you know, all roads lead to Rome, but that means that there was many roads, right? That were known.
Yeah.
And so there's many ways of doing the same thing, of getting to the same place. And some teachers like to be moved and other teachers absolutely hate it. Some teachers are like, I've been in this room for 30 years and I want to stay in this room until I retire. As a leader, we have to understand that and work within that too and say, look, they really like what they do. They're an expert teacher in this area. They love it. Mm. I don't know.
You know, I'm just being quiet listening to you. I totally agree with you. Yes, I think so. Yeah. If we don't listen and listen deeply to our staff, we run the risk of hurting them. We run the risk of causing significant offense. And, you know, we run the risk of staff revolting and revolting against us, not working with us and not working for the greater good. Mm-hmm. And I think that does happen. And you said an interesting thing there. Well, you said a lot of interesting things, but one particular one, when you talked about, you know, when we make mistakes, about the strength that lies in, for example, apologizing. Now, you did mention pride, and as leaders, we do have pride. You know, we do things, we want to stick to our guns, whatever, and we don't want to be wrong. Are there other things that make it difficult for us as leaders to be authentic, and especially to be authentic when we get it wrong?
Yes, I think absolutely. And I think the pressures of maybe the governmental pressures that come down on leaders, that we must enact certain policies and procedures, right? And and that comes down through the districts as well. I think that that makes it difficult for a formal leader within a school to always be transparent and authentic. And that's a really unfortunate thing that's happened, I believe, to our school systems throughout the world in the last, I would say, 30 years or so, right? Where where that authenticity is distanced, or it's taken away because of the pressures and because of thou shalt do this, you must do this. Even sometimes when we as leaders don't even believe in it, right? Yeah. And so then when we're trying to say, okay, this is what the district's saying, or this is what the government's saying, when we don't even believe in it, and then we see our staff not even believing it, it's kind of difficult to lead. And I think that this is a real issue that's happening. And the policymakers and the people in the, you know, district offices, I don't know what you call them in Ireland. We call them like board offices, district offices. They don't have to deal with the staff on a day in, day out basis, right? Like they don't have to deal. Yeah. So they can just say, you could tell them this, tell them that. And that is where I believe, a formal leadership's role, that creates difficulty for them because it's a real balancing act, because I believe that there are a lot of leaders out there that do really care about their staff. And some of them are maybe then better at showing it than others. And some are better at maybe reconciling and figuring out, okay, how can I juggle this to what the government wants us to do and the board wants us to do with what the school community, what's best for the school community and what's best for my teachers and what I'm hearing from my teachers and my staff. Mm-hmm. And that's a real... That's something that's a real juggling act.
I think you're absolutely right. I think, you know, there are larger forces, whatever, neoliberalism, performativity or whatever, that kind of invisibly come down and create a kind of a very structured, narrow framework on schools, you know, and quite often that is at odds especially I think with principals and leaders and leadership that has a more human or humanistic outlook. You know, we have to drive towards the results. We have to drive towards behavior, and we have to do it in certain ways rather than, you know, focusing on people and individuals and, you know, getting the best out of them and really educating them rather than just teaching them and getting them, you know, a set of results.
Oh, totally, totally. Because then what we're really doing is, what I see is happening is that it's impeding on a culture of growth and on a culture of learning. And it's impeding on innovation within schools when that happens, because it's just, again, I'm going to use the terminology. It's a cookie cutter model. It's making people, you must do it this way. You must do it that way. You've got to do X, Y, Z so that you have this outcome. And what's happening is that people are forgetting who are making up these policies and procedures, that we're actually dealing with human beings and who, you know, who have feelings, who have personalities, who have creativity, who are innovative, who are thoughtful, who have high IQs, right? Like teachers are inquisitive. They want to put their own flair onto things. And I know I'm kind of going all over the place here, but I'm sure, Paul, as a leader and even as a teacher, I think that you saw that when you really allowed teachers to take the ball and run with it in terms of a focused vision and, you know, focused in terms of what a school community wanted to do, that the creativity that came out of it and the innovation was probably phenomenal, right? Instead of saying, okay, if you just do X, Y, Z, this is what's going to happen. And it's all just results oriented and we're just all caring about testing, testing, testing. And I think that that is dehumanizing to both people, like to both teachers and also to the students. Because students, if the teacher isn't enjoying what they're doing, then it's passed down to the students. So then their learning's impeded as well, right? But if a teacher's allowed, and there's a lot of research on this, but if a teacher is permitted to be creative and innovative within the context of what they must teach, the curriculum and the expectations, but if they're permitted to teach it in a manner that is acceptable, and that they're accountable for the expectations, yet they're allowed to be creative and innovative, it's amazing what happens because they have that passion. I don't know many teachers that didn't start out with a passion to teach. And sometimes what happens is it's taken away from them because of all of the rhetoric that happens.
Cheryl, my biggest problem with this show this evening is that my sense and my feeling talking to you and this show is like I am, I'm going to cough again. I'm like a little boy who has walked into a sweet shop and I am just so dazed and so dazzled with all the sweets. I don't know what to choose first, what to pick or whatever. So the show is completely shapeless. We're bouncing all over the place, but it's fantastic.
Sorry, Paul.
No, I think it's me. It's me that's doing it because everything you say is, oh my goodness, it's so mouthwateringly fantastic. But Cheryl, we're going to take a little break now and we'll be right back after these messages.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live.
I've always considered myself to be a caring head teacher who acts sensitively to support staff mental health. But what I found increasingly difficult was managing the negative impact on staff mental health when resolving issues related to their employment or daily work. Heartfelt Leadership has been developed by TeachWell Toolkit as a handbook to support head teachers to overcome the challenges of school improvement while supporting staff well-being. We know that difficult conversations can quickly turn into conflict if procedures are not fully transparent, understood, and followed. our handbook takes you through step-by-step processes while maintaining mutual respect, avoiding conflict, and finding solutions.
At Bloomsbury Education, we're passionate about supporting teachers with high-quality professional development books from leading experts. Whether you're navigating your first crucial years as an early career teacher, or a more experienced teacher looking to refresh your practice or take a step up into leadership, our award-winning books are here to help. We publish practical books to support teaching across primary and secondary, from the very best in research-led practice to trusted advice on inclusivity, behaviour and curriculum design. Visit the Bloomsbury Education website at bloomsbury.com/education to find out more and use code BLOOMTTR24 to save 20% on all education titles. Bloomsbury Education, books for every step of your teaching journey.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News.
According to reports on the BBC News website, the EU wants to agree a deal with the UK that would make it easier for people aged between 18 and 30 to study abroad in the wake of Brexit. The European Commission says it would be a limited arrangement, not the restoration of freedom of movement. The UK already has schemes with some non-EU countries, and these allow people to come to the UK for up to 2 years. Downing Street says it's open to extending this to individual EU members rather than throughout the EU, but prefers country-by-country deals. The proposed EU scheme has time limits, and UK participants would only be able to stay in the EU country that accepted them. The report goes on to say that it would reduce controls on young people moving between the UK and EU. The European Commission says it is stepping in after the UK approached several EU countries to discuss deals. The Commission says it risked differential treatment of EU citizens, and there should be a bloc-wide deal for equality. The UK turned down an offer to continue participating in the EU's Erasmus student exchange after Brexit, but did replace it with the Turing scheme, which provides exchanges worldwide. The BBC South East team have covered concerns expressed by some students that they may run out of ADHD medication during the upcoming exam period. Some students have reported rationing their medication in order to stretch it out following reports of shortages due to an increase in demand and manufacturing issues. ADHD medications are often controlled drugs, which means prescriptions are limited to a month's supply, although some pharmacies also struggle to fill even this. The NHS advises against any changes of dosage without medical advice, but families continue to feel anxious about the possibility of young people struggling through the exam season. The Guardian reports on findings from communications regulator Ofcom, which suggests that a quarter of 3- and 4-year-olds in the UK now own a smartphone. Half of children under 13 are on social media. Online activity by infant school-aged children is rising. These findings could boost the argument of those urging the government to clamp down on social media and phone use by young children. A consultation will likely be launched in coming weeks, according to sources in government. This could include a proposal to ban mobile phone sales to under 16s, one to make it easier for parents to use parental controls on devices, and one to raise the minimum age for social media sites from 13 to 16. Michelle Donlan, Technology Secretary, said children as young as 5 should not be accessing social media. The Ofcom figures come amid what The Guardian says is growing evidence of the impact of social media use amongst children, and the US government refers to it as a profound risk to mental health. The book The Anxious Generation, published in March by a US academic, has been cited as influencing thinking in number 10. The Ofcom survey was based on 2,480 parents of children aged between 3 and 17. The TES reports that absence rates are up again according to latest DfE figures. This is compared with spring 2022-23. This is despite the government's ongoing attendance drive. Overall absence for last term was 7.3%, slightly up on the 7% in the previous year. The Department for Education said the rise was likely to have been caused by a higher level of illness absence. The proportion of persistently absent pupils has also slightly increased to 21.9% of pupils who were missing 10% or more half days. The figures for disadvantaged pupils are worse when compared to their peers. Full details of the latest data can be found on TES.com. Finally, the TES also features a report that the Department for Education does not intend to replace current progress measures, known as Progress 8, for the next 2 years. After exploring alternatives, there will be no progress measures published for schools in England in 2024-25 or 2025-26. The cancellation of Year 6 SATs during the pandemic meant that there was no Key Stage 2 attainment data available as a baseline for Progress 8 calculations. Headline attainment measures will still be published and grading will take place as normal. The Department for Education says it intends to return to Progress 8 in 2026-27. Teaching unions welcomed the announcement, but some described it as a missed opportunity to rethink performance tables overall. This has been your Teachers Talk Radio News with Joe Fox.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live.
Welcome back, everybody. It's the Lit Lit Show on Thursday, the 25th of April, and I am absolutely dazzled in this sweet shop of Cheryl's vision and experience of leadership. Cheryl, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Oh, good. That's great. Yeah, great. Cheryl, tell me this then. We've kind of catapulted all over the place in terms of leadership, but just great, fantastic stuff. And we've looked specifically, I think, at caring and compassionate leadership. What is the impact of caring leadership on a school?
That's a really good point. Can I just say, I'll come back to that for a second though, Paul, but I just wanted to pick up on something as I was listening to the news that you mentioned about, you know, making mistakes. And I think that that is really the mindset of a leader, right? So a leader decides, okay, am I going to have a growth mindset? Am I going to learn from my mistakes? Or am I just going to put up walls and not admit that I've made mistakes? And so I just wanted to, you know, I just wanted to emphasize that it sounds as if you yourself have that growth mindset that, okay, I've made mistakes. I understand that I've made mistakes, but now I need to grow from them and I need to refine myself from them. I don't let them define me and who I am, because I think that when we do, we let fear come in, right? Instead of courage. Anyway, so I just wanted to make that point because I didn't talk about that a little bit.
Yeah.
So
we're falling into the same trap again. I am. Yes. I'm falling into the same trap again. That's too juicy to let you just end there.
Sorry. I was just reflecting on it as I was listening to your advertisements and to the news. Yeah. And then the news was even bringing up other points that I could make too. And I thought, dear, we could be on here for 5 hours yet.
We could. We definitely could. There's no doubt of that. Yeah. Yeah. But Cheryl, that raises the question for me then. You see, okay, good leaders reflect. Good leaders want to improve. Good leaders want to be better. Cheryl, what's the motivation for that?
I believe it comes from an internal motivation. I believe that it's really someone's attitude and their mindset. And, you know, there's been many studies that have looked at IQ versus EQ, for example, right? But I think it comes down to someone who's emotionally intelligent as well, right? And recognizing, okay, I'm not running this ship by myself, right? Because if a leader thinks that they are, the ship's going to go down pretty quickly. It's going to sink. So they understand, they have high emotional intelligence. And so part of that emotional intelligence is having a mindset of understanding that, okay, I do make mistakes. all right, all of us as humans are flawed. Yes, I am the formal leader, but there's many informal leaders. And so I must learn from my mistakes. I have to go back. I have to apologize for my mistakes. And then we need to move on. And I think a good leader too, or a positive leader with a positive mindset also helps the staff, or most of the staff. Not everyone's going to be on board either, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes we might have to throw them into lifeboats, or, you know, give them a little, I'm just thinking of this analogy of a, you know, we might have to rescue them from a lifeboat. Where was I going to go with this? But, you know, a good leader also helps the staff maintain positive altitude and positive attitudes. Doesn't let them get mired in the muck of, okay, so there was a mistake made. We're all flawed. So I think it's building this community of collaboration and building this community of, okay, we're in this together, right? And we're all flawed. Yes, people are going to look to the leader at the end of the day to make maybe the final decision, but not always. It depends on what the decision is that needs to be made. And it depends on the issue. Sure, sometimes leaders do need to make the decisions, but sometimes they don't. Sometimes the formal leaders don't need to make the decisions. And so it's also being comfortable in your own skin, I think, to realize that, oh, I don't need to make all of these leadership decisions. A committee can, a team of leaders, a team of influencers can, a team of informal leaders can in the school. So I think it's being comfortable with self.
I was just thinking about it. You see, I just found it a very stimulating comment, and just I wondered, you know, what motivates the leader then to be better? And just what I was thinking of, I agree with everything you say now, but thinking back, one of my motivations in trying always to be a better leader was I loved my people. Mm-hmm. I loved my teachers. Even the ones I would have throttled on a wet Wednesday, I loved them.
It's true.
Ones that really annoyed me, and I probably loved them most, you know. And everybody, you know, from, you know, the little crossing patrol lady, right through to the governors, right through our visitors, the secretaries, the canteen ladies, the students, the difficult ones, the parents, just everybody. And I always thought, you know, these people are fantastic. And they have put me in a leadership position. And it means nothing without me being as good as I can be for them. Because I always thought my decisions, my representations, my meetings, being an ambassador for the school or whatever it was, I was always just carrying their message, you know, what they do and how they do it and why they do it. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Absolutely, that makes sense. Mm. Absolutely. So you were taking the collective in, not just the individual.
Well, occasionally it might have been individuals, of course, but yes, it was.
Sure.
It was much more. I'm a big believer, you see, in the importance of ethos. And I saw myself very much as a promoter and a guardian and defender of the ethos that was set in the school. And, you know, to me, it was important that everybody fed into that ethos. Therefore, you know, I would support them, and it was about promoting them and so on. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, I think that all comes back to the mindset of a person. And I guess it comes back to a question of, can that be taught, and can someone's mindset shift? Because you had that mindset. And so even though you probably made mistakes in your leadership and you, I look back at some of my mistakes too in my leadership, but I always had this mindset that we were in this together and that I wanted the best for the people, because like you said, I love them all, really. I cared for them all, even the ones that gave me a really hard time, right? And, and I'm not saying that some of them didn't give me a hard time, or some of them didn't even really want to work, right? And so that was the difficulty too, of really getting them to work and to maybe, and that wasn't very many, but there were a few that didn't, right? And so did I always have everyone on board? No. But I think that over time, as a leader, I realized, okay, if I have the majority on board and people are genuinely happy in their work, that they will enjoy teaching, that the passion will be there, that the students will link into the passion, and that they will learn, and that really test results will increase because teachers are enjoying what they're doing. The students are enjoying learning. They're learning from experts. And so it's really realizing who those experts are and putting them into the right teaching positions too, and not moving them around as much as maybe what some principals are doing nowadays with some staff. I know one staff that a principal's just moving the teachers every year from their rooms, from the ages that they're teaching, from the grade levels, and it just creates a lot of chaos. So I think it's really knowing yourself, knowing your staff, and I think at the end of the day, it's loving yourself first. Because when I hear of some things that are going on in schools, I think, well, that principal, that formal leader mustn't really like themselves very well, right? And so I think that that is maybe where mentoring can come in. That is where guiding people can come in. And it's also, I made sure that I got on committees where I would help with the hiring process of new leaders. I mean, if we want to talk about how can we shift a culture in leadership and leaders, it's really hiring the right people. It's really looking, but it's also seeing sometimes that diamond in the rough, seeing that, okay, they're not here yet, but they can get there, right? Because they have a good heart. So I think it's, I mean, there's so many areas that we can help leadership within schools, but I think it's hiring the right leaders as well, and that they're leaders that are going into it because they love being a leader. They love the staff. They love the parents. They love the students, regardless of whether they're sometimes loved back. Right?
Yes. Yes.
which is a challenge at times, right? It is.
But it's a bit of really an understatement.
Yes. Yes.
So Cheryl, we got sidetracked, and that's good, and I'm sure it's going to happen, but I'm going to come back to that question. What is the impact then of caring leadership on a school, you know, on children, on teachers, on that community? And you know, we would have quite a number of what we might call command and control leaders. Mm-hmm. You know, they would be very tough, very outspoken, no room for maneuver type principals who run very tight ships. And on the surface, you know, there is a certain success, and, you know, that can even be examination success, and it kind of reflects well, I suppose. But I just wonder, and that's not to say these are polar opposites. You know, there can be, you know, huge overlap. But what is the impact of leadership then on school children and the local community?
Like, do you mean the impact of someone who's authoritative versus someone who's caring? I'm not quite too sure what you're asking.
Yeah, well, I suppose I was just drawing the contrast, you know, but I suppose I was trying to wonder, you know, is the impact of caring leadership different from the impact of what we might want to call, you know, a more authoritarian or command and control type leadership?
Yes, I see it definitely different, because I think with people that are command and control, There's a lot of fear. So they run by fear. They run by intimidation. Yeah. I call them terrorists, actually. You know, they always send out, you know, bomb threats. And
Cheryl, you can't do that in Northern Ireland. We've a wee bit of a history here in Northern Ireland.
Yes, I know. I was just, as soon as I said that, I thought, uh-oh, I'm probably using the wrong metaphor, the wrong analogy here. Okay, but you know what I mean.
Don't you?
By this.
Don't worry. We've got peace now. Don't worry. Okay.
I'm going to get kicked off the show. Okay, I'm cut now. I have to leave. But but you know what I mean by this, like that they run through fear and intimidation. And so the fear trickles down. And so people are afraid. So if they step out of place or if they don't do exactly what they're told, there's a lot of fear. And so that then starts to work on staff, starts to work on students. It just makes the entire culture of the school more fear-based and more command and control. So the teachers then become command and control. The students become command and control. There's a lot more fighting. There's a lot more just dissension and strife in schools like that. And there's a lot of research out there. I mean, I think that anyone that's listening and yourself too, we've all been a part of schools like that. They weren't fun. They were, or we've had teachers like that, or we've worked for people like that. It's just not a fun place to be, but I don't think it's as productive because we know what happens to our brains when we're in this fight or flight mode, right? Like the cortisol doesn't run as, like it just affects our thinking. It affects our every part of our being, whether we're a staff member who's being led by coercion and control and fear and intimidation, or whether we're a student.
Yeah.
So I think overall, it just doesn't work well. Whereas with a caring, and with caring, I also want to ensure that you and other people don't think that I don't believe in accountability. Because with caring, yes, there must be accountability. There has to be, right? Because if we're not accountable, then it means that we're not really caring for the person in their whole and in their entirety, right? Like I'm not, I'll give you an example. I inherited a school as a principal one time in February, and it's like, so we have our school years from September to June. The worst time to inherit a school if it's not run well. The best time probably to inherit it if it is run well. It was run just terribly. And there was just no accountability, and students were just able to do whatever they wanted to do. Okay, so to me, that's not even caring. They said the principal was a very nice person. But that care isn't there for the staff or for the students, because on my first day, I met these students at the staircase, just sliding down the banister and swearing, right, as they're sliding down. That's how I met them. And this was my behavior class students, right? Yeah. So I had to quickly pull them into line and make them accountable for their behavior and for the way that they were speaking and acting. And that took a bit, but I told them I cared about them. I cared about them then, and I cared about them in the future. Because if I allowed them to continue to slide down the banister and to swear and to intimidate and to bully, then I wasn't really teaching them and making them accountable for their actions. And I wasn't teaching them how to be a citizen in society, how to actually behave in a larger community and in society. So I wasn't doing my job. So that is part of the caring leadership as well. And that's not being coercive, and that's not being intimidating. That's actually caring.
I would agree with you. Yes, I do agree. Yeah. I also agree. I think there's a big difference, and it can be slow to gather evidence really of the difference between the command and control leader and the more caring leader. But I do think you're right. I think there's a climate of fear in the command and control schools quite quickly, and that permeates down to everybody. I know we used to talk an awful lot. It sounds a bit trite and so on. And obviously there was a lot more than just the phrase, but we used to talk a lot about, you know, make them good people first. And it didn't matter if it was pupils, teachers, parents, supervisors or whatever. Because a bit like, and you talked about Carl Rogers at the beginning, you know, Carl Rogers talked about everybody having the propensity towards self-actualization.
Yes.
And if you do try to, you know, teach people about values, self-respect, behavior, you know, all kinds of self-reliance, have a good vision about themselves and so on, what we would have found, and it takes a long time to get feedback on this, and we need to get results and we need to show things, but if you can manage to do that, children then fulfill their academic potential. Do you know, so you do get a lot of children who get extraordinary results, and you do get others who get great results, and that's their potential fulfilled. And it's not necessarily because you're teaching to the pin of your collar, or that you're having an overly structured and disciplined school. The children are intrinsically motivated to do well. But it takes a lot of convincing, it takes a lot of self-belief, and a lot of persuasion, and so on.
Mm. Yes, I like that word persuasion too. It does, it does. It takes a lot of persuasion because people are set in their ways and sometimes they don't want to change, but I think, I mean, what you said too about, you know, then children want to learn and they want to behave. And I think we can all think about principals that were leading our schools or teachers that taught us, or it was the ones that really showed that they cared. They were structured though, but we knew that they cared for us, and they showed their humanness. We didn't want to disappoint them.
Yeah.
We wanted to have a relationship with them. And I think that is what these coercive leaders are missing, that they're just too control bound, that they don't really understand, or they don't have it in their toolkit, that if they just demonstrated to people that they cared, that it would just be so much easier for them really as well, but so much easier for the whole school. And it can still run quite effectively. And people don't want to let people down that they actually care about too. They want to do a good job. They want to have a school that that they can be proud of. They want to have a report card that they can be proud of and take home to their parents, because they feel good about themselves, because they know that their teacher believes in them and then they believe in themselves. So it's all building that, like you said, that intrinsic motivation that is really at the heart and soul of everyone. And I believe it's the difference too between a coercive leader and a caring leader. It's how, what are they motivated by? What is really their motivation for leading?
Yeah. Did you ever think about the medium to longer term for, you know, the students and teachers that you had, Cheryl? Now, by that, maybe what I would quite often have thought about, especially when you get on in years a wee bit and you've taught the parents of some of the, and occasionally taught the odd grandparent. And I suppose one of the things that made me think was the 11 to 19 year olds that you're teaching now, I mean, they're going to go on to be parents. They're going to go on to be grandparents and so on and so forth. And I would have spent quite a time, you know, thinking about how can we do things now that will improve the quality of their lives, you know, when they're in their 30s, in their 40s, and in their 50s. Would you ever have had that kind of reflection or thinking?
Oh, absolutely. And I would say that to students as well and to parents, right? I would say to them, I care about you now and I care about you in the future. I said, I can see you in the future. And so this is why it's so important for you. I'm just thinking of a student that might have been misbehaving, for example. And then the parents come in and they're getting all upset or whatever. Like sometimes that happens, right? And so it's really just then bringing it down and saying, look, this is all about caring. It's all about caring about your child now and in the future. And how can we make them like themselves and be happy now mm-hmm. so that they can be productive citizens and value themselves mm-hmm. now and in the future, so they can build strong relationships now so that they can teach their children and that they can have strong relationships in the workplace. Because I believe that that's what's really missing, is that we have a society now with some people, not everyone, that's very self-absorbed. And mm-hmm. so it's all me, me, me. And so yeah. it's looking at, yes, it's important to like yourself. And that's the key, right? It's that key, that self-actualization that you talked about. Mm-hmm. But then it's going beyond ourselves. And it's really looking at others and caring about others and wanting the best for others. And so mm-hmm. I think that if we model that and teach that and show students and staff that that's really at the heart of our leadership, mm-hmm. that they'll also then do it too, and that it will just have a ripple effect. Mm-hmm. And people listening might think, oh, I don't know if that's possible, but it is possible. It's very possible. We can change.
Oh, I think it people. Is.
I think it's very possible because yeah. we are our brains, it's neuro, you know, we have that neuroplasticity within our brains. So we can change yes. habits. I mean, when people diet, they change their habits. When people yeah. exercise, they change their habits. We can yeah. also change our habits and our mindset in terms of how do we see ourselves? How do we see others? How do we see ourselves within this world and within our communities? We can yeah. definitely change. It takes work. Yes, it does. But we can help others change too. And it takes work for them too.
Yeah, definitely agree.
Because the alternative yeah. is like, okay, we'll just throw our hands up and, you know, we'll just all, right? We'll just all rule by fear. And that's not working at all. We can see that in our world. It's not working.
It definitely doesn't work. No, no, it really doesn't. Yeah. Cheryl, I'm just aware we're going to have to close the show shortly, but maybe just a couple of final shorter questions. I know you've kind of already answered or gone some way to answering this, but just, you know, so listeners can kind of have in a nutshell, how does a leader show that she cares? How does she show her staff that she cares?
Mm. Yeah, really good question. And I mean, there's a number of ways that a leader can. And so when I'm going to answer this question, I don't want people to think, okay, here's the 5-step plan. Right? Because mm-hmm. we all have our own unique personal experiences that we bring into leadership, and we mm-hmm. all have our own unique leadership styles. But I mm-hmm. think that at the essence of it all is that we have to realize that our attitude determines our altitude. Okay, so we have to realize that that we have to show people that we care. And we do yeah. that first by them seeing that we care about ourselves, that we have our own self-love. Right. And that mm-hmm. and not self-absorption, not me, 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 but that we actually are rooted and grounded and we're self-actualized. I'll use that word coming from Carl Rogers as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then we have to have that relational piece. So we have to want to know others. We have to want to lead others. We want to believe in ourselves, but we want to believe in others. And mm-hmm. so we need to have this mindset that we want to build positive relationships that are lasting, that we don't just see them as, okay, if I just build a relationship just so that I can get them to do what I want. Mm-hmm. Well, no, people are very intelligent. They understand that, that's coercion. I mean, it yeah. might work for a day or two, but in the long term, it doesn't. And so it's actually recognizing that, that we're not an island and that we all are here to help one another. Mm-hmm. It's being intentional, I think, with our words. So it's this intentionality. It's looking at a lens of strength, a strength-based lens that I think is so important. Mm-hmm. Not sure, and not being unrealistic and realizing that people have deficits. Yes, we all do, but it's understanding people's strengths and it's building upon them. But then it's also mm-hmm. teaching them to do that with students, right? Because, mm-hmm. and I'll just give you this quick example. I don't know how long I have here, but for instance, I used to run. Okay, so here's an example just with my daughter. So I used to run. And so when she was a baby, I would push her in this running stroller, right? Mm-hmm. And then when she was a little bit older, she would, you know, she would ride her bike beside me. Then mm-hmm. I started to run with her and she would run with me. Now, if I would have like said, what are you doing? You're running so slow. You're this, you're that. She would have stopped maybe running, right? Like if yes. I would have pointed out all of the mistakes that she was making, right? Because I was the better mm-hmm. runner. Now, guess who's the better runner? Guess who can outrun mom? She can, right?
Yeah.
But I think it's understanding that it's helping someone develop. Mm-hmm. It's helping someone evolve into the person that they were actually created to become.
Yeah.
And we do that through looking at them at a lens, through a strength-based lens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not through a deficit lens. And I always believed in that as a teacher too, that I, because you know, we have these individual education plans where we got to write down students' strengths and their challenges and whatever. But and sure, we have to discuss them, but we don't overplay them, right? We recognize them, but we don't overplay them. But we recognize that everyone has flaws. Then yeah. It's having though this shared vision. So it's being collaborative as a staff.
Mm-hmm.
It's being reflective, but it's also coming on board with and deciding together what is maybe a shared vision or some shared visions that we can work on together.
Mm-hmm.
But mm-hmm. caring about other people's opinions and listening. And so having like a collaborative mind frame and using intentional words like we, not I.
Mm-hmm.
So listening to the words that are happening too mm-hmm. in conversations. And with the LRI that I work with the University of Southern Queensland, they have this professional conversations protocol that Dorothy and Joan developed, that Dorothy Andrews and Joan Conway developed. And so working with staffs in terms of how do we speak with one another in an intentional manner. So I think it's having these intentionalities and really developing students' IQs.
Mm-hmm.
Because that we are accountable for that, right? So being accountable for progressing mm-hmm. students and setting bars high and expectations high, but yet mm-hmm. also doing that with EQ, with emotional intelligence, mm-hmm. and what's the best way that we can actually go about that? Did I mm-hmm. am I answering your question? Or?
I think you absolutely are. I think that was fantastic. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. First class. Yeah. And I hope I'm not doing a disservice to what you say by, you know, by summarizing what I really heard there was Roger's core conditions, empathy, congruence, positive regard. Now, there's a little bit of meat on the bones, but that's basically what I heard. It's a way of relating to people and relating with a purpose, the purpose being education, personal growth, becoming an adult, becoming a person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's our responsibility. Yes. Yes. Very good. Yeah. No, good, good. And being that servant leader, I think that that's the important thing, right? And that comes out of Roger's stuff, his work as well.
Yes.
And yeah. I mean, I could have quoted all kinds of research, but I didn't think that that's really what you wanted to hear. In this, but it does show that when people do treat people this way, that the growth is exponential. Like it's much more than a coercive leader, for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cheryl, towards the end of every show, I ask guests a question. Now, I generally give them the question in advance. I'm not sure if you've had an opportunity to see it. If you had a magic wand and only one spell to cast, what change would you make to education that would significantly improve the life of teachers?
It would be waving the magic wand of caring.
Mm.
It would be waving a magic wand where people were kind and caring. Because to me, that's the root of everything. Kind to yourself, caring to others, and everything will grow from there.
Mm-hmm. Wow, what a fantastic wish. Let's hope that one definitely comes true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cheryl, we're at the end of the show. It has been fantastic to spend time with you. And I think we'll have to have you on the show again. There was just so much that we said and covered, but I've written so much on pages here that we haven't got around to covering yet. Thank you so much for your time, your wisdom, and your insights, most valuable to teachers.
You're welcome. And thank you so much, Paul, for having me on the show. And I would love to be on the show again. This was a great conversation. Very, very stimulating. And I know that we were all over the place, but I think it was important but yet focused.
All over the place, but focused. I like that. All over the place, but focused. Cheryl, on that note, we'd better say good night. Take care.
Good night.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.